Hello and welcome
again. I refuse. Hi and welcome to another episode of Too Scared to Sleep.
How is that better?
I'm not letting you do the PBS voice.
What do you mean? It's just
it gets
my hello
to me every time.
It's just my hello.
Every single episode starts with your vanilla ice cream voice.
I don't. It's barely different than my regular voice.
My name's Dylan, and there's the other guy. I've got the energy. Fucked.
All right.
Bringing
whatever.
The heat. Bringing the thunder. Bringing the hail, Satan.
Hell yeah, brother.
Anyway, we had a really good time last week, almost a week ago. There's a Facebook group for people who ride motorcycles here in our area, and it turns out that they meet up at this Sonic every Tuesday night for Bikes and Burgers, and so we went last week at Bikes and Burgers, and the guy, what's funny, it's not funny for him, the main organizer guy had a wreck on his bike the week before, so 2 weeks ago, and destroyed his knee, and so he had to have surgery, reconstructive surgery, and he needed to borrow a wheelchair, so I took him his wheelchair. But anyway, he wasn't there, so there weren't that many people at Bikes and Burgers, but we were hanging out.
Yeah.
Dylan hadn't eaten dinner, so...
Oh god, I forgot about this.
He buys himself a coney from...
Because it's good.
Sonic.
Got myself a chili.
I'm sure it's
coney.
Good. Okay, so there were three other guys there, two Hispanic guys, kind of burly, then one guy, he was a little scuzzy, and he rides a Honda Grom. Go ahead and Google Honda Grom.
Yeah, it's something that Jake desperately wants.
Listen, the only reason I wanted Honda Grom is for the fun factor. What I want to do is I want both of us to get Honda Groms, and then we're going to dress up like bikers from Sons of Anarchy, and we're going to ride those fucking things all over town looking like badasses, because there's nothing badass about someone who pretends to be a biker from Sons of Anarchy, but especially if you're riding around on a Honda Grom. I think it would be hilarious.
Absolutely. And that reminds me real quick, just a very brief segue. I totally forgot to tell you, I think it was last week, maybe the week before, I was working at Earthbound, where I still work retail, and I was standing up there just chilling at the counter. It was pretty close to closing. We had this group come in. It was like three people. It was like two average-looking dudes and one dude that, you know, definitely looked the part of biker, you know? The baggy dark jeans, you know, a simple little wallet chain, some standard black boots, some, like, cool guy t-shirt. But the kicker, the thing that blew my mind... He had like an actual leather vest on, like looked like a real cut from a club. And then he turned around. Sons of Anarchy, San Antonio chapter, or I think it was Austin.
Sons of
Anarchy, the fucking middle rocker, and then the actual like Austin, Texas chapter rocker on the bottom.
Christ.
And turned around, and I paid close attention to like his fucking cut, and he had like the fucking Men of Mayhem shit. He had the fucking like Sam Crow, which in the mythology of Sons of Anarchy doesn't even work.
No, it doesn't. If you understand the mythology, which we do because we grew up around bikers, you can't have the Men of Mayhem patch unless you've killed somebody for the club. You can't have the Sam Crow patch unless you're a member of the original group. You can't have the Redwood original patch on your cut unless you're one of the founding members.
Yeah. But homeboy thought it was a good idea to actually leave the house in essentially a Sons of Anarchy cosplay.
Yeah. It's like
customized with Austin, Texas rockers.
That's like that's like walking out of your house as a Civil War reenactor. No, it's not even that, because that happened in real life. It really is like cosplay, and we would never make fun of people wearing cosplay, because we've dressed up in cosplay,
yes,
and we've
cosplay
left the house, but it's been for
thing,
a reason.
Like,
but these guys who do it are doing it for the badassery level, and it's just not badass, because there's actual bikers out there who wear these things as a symbol of their membership, and the patches mean something, and you shouldn't go around pretending.
No, because some of the people, especially in Austin, that actually have earned their patches, if they see you with a Sons of Anarchy cut, they will kick the shit out of you.
Yeah, because
you're a clown.
Because
if any of our listeners have ever considered getting a Sons of Anarchy rocker for any reason other than a Halloween party to wear only that time.
I was about to say, that's the only reason you can do that.
Do not do it.
Of all the people that you can lampoon by wearing a costume to look like them, bikers are probably on the level that you want to stay away from. That and, like, you know, KKK or Trumpers.
Exactly. But
KKK and Trumpers, that's almost the same thing at this point in life.
I mean, honestly.
I told myself I wasn't going to get super political, but I did.
But you know what? Fuck it. We always circle back around to it. We always
circle back around. Anyway, so we're at Bikes and Burgers. I want to get back to the story.
Oh, yeah.
We're at Bikes and Burgers, and we're just hanging out. It's a total sausage fest. There aren't any girls there. It wasn't that we needed any girls to be there, but, you know, we were wondering what kind of, like, who was going to actually show up. And then this girl shows up, and she starts walking towards us, and she's tall, and she's a little bit goth because she was wearing what were they, Vans, mm-hmm. with this dress, and you could tell that she had a couple of tattoos. Perfect for my boy Dylan over there.
Perfect. Well, not perfect, but close enough. Yeah.
And I look at him and I say, Dylan, take it easy. Remain calm. This is what we train for.
Just so, like the simulations.
Just like the simulations. We can do this. And she walks over, and Dylan takes a big old bite of his coney, and I looked at him and I said, well, at least you're not eating a phallus in front of her. And he almost choked on his hat and his hot dog. You
fucking asshole. Oh my God.
Oh, but she was just as weird as you would imagine she would be. And, you know, she couldn't top, anyway, it doesn't matter.
Yeah, ended up not being somebody that I'd really be interested in.
No.
Also, I think I heard her mention that she was, like, just barely 18. So it was like,
she's just barely 18.
Like, that's not that big of an age difference from where I'm at, but I still not feeling that.
Perfect for Matt Geitz. Not so much for my boy Dylan.
Yikes. But anyway. Yeah. Yeah, so that was interesting. But, you know, the people there seemed pretty cool. Got some compliments on her bikes. That was pretty nice.
That was nice.
Got some good looks. My bike, up until like the last dude showed up, was the only one that didn't have any red on it.
That was kind of weird, and I noticed that.
They were all like
black and red.
All black and red.
Or gray and red.
Or gray and red.
Dylan, have you ever seen Mean Girls?
Of course I've seen Mean Girls.
They remade Mean Girls.
No.
For the boomer generation.
No.
They remade Mean Girls for the boomer generation. What the
fuck does that even entail?
Yeah, it's about a 70-year-old lady moving into a retirement home.
Oh my fucking God.
And having to deal with the social hierarchy in the retirement home.
Are you fucking kidding me?
I'm not kidding. I cannot. And it's called Queen Bees. And if you know anything about Mean Girls, Tina Fey wrote Mean Girls, wrote mm-hmm. the screenplay for Mean Girls. It was one of the first screenplays that she wrote while she was still at SNL. And it's based off of a book called Queen Bees and Wannabes.
Oh, good Lord.
This movie's called Queen Bees, and it stars Ellen Burstyn, who won an Academy Award for One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest.
Yeah.
James Caan. Anne Margaret. Do you remember Anne Margaret from Grumpy Old Men? That was years ago. Jane Curtin, who was one of the original SNL cast members. Mm-hmm. And Christopher Lloyd.
Ah,
Doc Brown.
Chris, you doing okay, bud? Why are you doing this?
Let me tell you something. Go and watch this trailer. They look so fucking old. Oh, I know why. Because they are fucking old. Because
everyone there is old. I love mm-hmm. Christopher Lloyd, but it's an old, old dude. Yeah.
Also, Loretta Devine is in it. She was on Grey's Anatomy for years, and then they killed her off. Of course, Shonda Rhimes. Shonda Spoilers. Rhimes is a one-trick pony. When she doesn't know what to do with her show, she kills. She either kills off a couple of cast members, or she causes some sort of huge, like, extinction-level event in Seattle. It's like they're living in the old school Sim City, where they were like, you know, every couple of years there was a tornado, or there was a fire, or there was a tsunami, or a flood. It's really crazy. Dylan, get off your goddamn phone.
I'm sorry, I'm responding to a cute alternative girl.
So. I had a lucid dream where I was working in an office, and I sent an email to one of my co-workers talking about how ridiculous he was about something in a meeting and this and that, and so he decided that he was going to take offense to it, and he shows up outside the office wanting to get into a fist fight with me, which is perfectly fine if he wants to. In this dream my co-worker turned out to be Kumail Nanjiani.
Early Kumail Nanjiani or current ripped Kumail Nanjiani?
It was current ripped for the Eternals movie. No. Kumail Nanjiani, who showed up to have a fight.
Oh, no, you are not winning that one, bud.
And I just looked at him and I said, okay, let's do this. And I remember in and of myself, the part of me that was awake in the lucid dream was like, okay, that's fine. We can have this fight. But he showed up with four of his friends. And I'm like, wait a minute. We're not doing a five against one thing. Look, if you want to have a fight where I bring in four guys and you bring in four guys and we have a big brawl in the parking lot, that's fine. But it's Friday and I need until Monday to get these guys to
get yourself a little Letterkenny brawl going.
Get myself a little Letterkenny brawl.
And listen, if you're ever in a Letterkenny brawl situation, I don't care that I'm crippled. I am waiting for an excuse to get into a fight. I will have your back, boy.
Dylan, I've never been so proud of you. Awesome. That's good. I'll put your name down on the list.
Thank you. I better be number one.
You definitely are number one.
Good. So I got a murder in my eyes.
Number one in the charts.
Number one in our hearts. Yep. Dan, look at that. Callback. The writers must have been paying attention this episode.
All right. Dylan, you want to go first or you want me to go first?
I will go first because I have a little bit of a shorter topic this time around.
It's a little short one. It's a short one, but it gets the job done.
Oh, boy.
We're still talking about the topic, right?
I am.
Let's go.
I don't know where you're coming from. Anyway, we are going to be talking about one of my favorite funky little cryptid dudes, the Flatwoods Monster.
Flatwoods Monster.
Also known as Braxy to some people.
I love it.
I love it so much. This is another one that I want to include in my tattoo cryptid plan.
You're crazy.
Yeah. Oh, actually, that reminds me real quick. So I am currently working at the tattoo shop doing the apprentice work. It's pretty cool. I've been learning how to do the front end stuff, which I've gotten a pretty good hold on. But I was talking to my artist because I wanted to see if it would be okay for me to set up a tattoo appointment with him while I was still apprenticing. Because I want to do it while I still got a little bit of money. Mm-hmm. And I don't have to go buy iPads and shit, right? Mm-hmm. I think I'm going to do my elbow next. So we're talking about, like, elbow tattoos and, like, just kind of what that whole thing is going to look like. He said normally he'll only do, like, if it's a piece that goes down or up, he'll only do the elbow first. And then they'll come back later and do, like, lower on the arm.
Okay.
Which is what mine was going to be. But he was saying that if you get your elbow tattooed, you will have your bone tattooed because it's close enough. Like the skin is so thin and it's close enough to the bone that you will get ink in your bone most likely. I was like, man, that'll be cool as shit. I can say I'm tattooed to the bone, bitch.
I don't know why, but my knee hurts so much thinking about that.
Oh, man. Oh, yeah. No, that the elbow is going to hurt. It's going to be really, really painful, but I really want to do it anyway. Oh, my God. Yeah.
That's fine. You're down this path. At least we found your path.
Exactly.
It's fine.
I'm just fitting in more.
Because, again, if we're talking about D&D, you've gone past the point where you can respec your skill points.
Mm-hmm.
You're way too far down the skill tree to respec your skill points, but at least you found your your calling in your profession.
Exactly. What am I going to do? Fucking be a lawyer? A doctor? Fuck that noise.
Dr. Caden Ed.
No, couldn't be me.
It was never meant to be you.
This is who I am.
Dylan Caden Ed.
Dun, 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 dun,
in a role he was born to play.
This is my Deadpool, Ryan Gosling.
Coming in 2022. Not Ryan Gosling. No.
Brian
no.
Reynolds. Holy Coming shit.
Coming in fall of 2021, Dylan is Tattoo Padawan.
Dun, 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 dun.
Dun, 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 dun.
All right, anyway.
In theaters and HBO Max. Streaming same day.
Okay, anyway, back to the Flatwood Monster.
Wait, did you ever watch The Conjuring 3?
No, I haven't watched it yet.
Oh, my God.
I have not had time to watch movies.
Okay. That's true. You're so busy. Never mind, you're right.
Yeah. Today is my only day off for the foreseeable future. Probably have to swear off of
women, too.
What?
Just don't have time for women, either.
Barely. I squeeze it in when I can. That was not at all what I meant. Son of a bitch.
Title of your sex tape.
Son of a bitch.
At least you we brought got a it
blooper
up.
For this one.
You said it. I know. Fuck.
Anyway. Yeah, I'm working like I'm literally going to be working 7 days a week.
That's the
for
title.
The foreseeable
that's
future.
The title of our episode. Dylan squeezes it in when he can.
Oh, good Lord.
I love it.
All right. Anyway, let's get back to the Flatwoods Monster and let's get away it. From this.
Go ahead. Tell me about it. Blow me. Blow me away, Dylan.
There it is. Been a minute since we've heard that one.
Mm-hmm.
So, on the evening of September 12th, 1952, in West Virginia.
Always in West Virginia.
It's always in West Virginia. That's why they have a whole ass cryptid museum that I want to go to so badly.
I mean, I would go for the cryptids, but leave because of all of the poverty.
Leave because it's West Virginia.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. No, the only reason I want to go to West Virginia is to touch the Mothman statue and see the cryptid museum.
Did you see that people were offering, they were leaving cans of beans at the Mothman statue?
No.
And so the mayor was like, please stop doing that. And then somebody decided to put a box there, and it was the offering box for the beans, and they were going to send them to like a homeless shelter, like a food pantry. And then the mayor had them take the box away.
What the fuck?
I know.
What the fuck is that?
What's wrong with you?
Bastard.
I hope the Mothman finds out about this and takes care of it.
I hope he eats the mayor.
Yeah, I hope so. I hope the mayor comes back and says, put that box back because the Mothman was outside my house last night for 5 hours, banging on the windows.
Screeching at me in primordial tongues.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Good. Mm-hmm. Fuck that guy.
In that ancient Sumerian language that he speaks.
Ugh. Love that.
It's always ancient Sumerian. I love that.
But yeah, everything happens in West Virginia. It is a nightmare hellscape of cryptids and probably meth. But, you know, it looks beautiful. Okay, so let's see here. In West Virginia, four Flatwoods residents by the names of Neil Nunley, Tommy Heyer, Edward and Freddie May were playing on the playground of the local elementary school when they were interrupted by a blinding light streaking across the sky above before crashing down in the farm of a Mr. G. Bailey Fisher.
So like a fucking comet.
Like a comet.
Oh my god.
Now, the interesting thing about this is that it was reported that during this time, there was actually a meteor that was flying overhead that was going right over West Virginia and a couple other states.
Okay.
But the meteor did not crash as far as we know.
Yeah, I wouldn't think so.
I feel like we would probably have heard about that.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So they saw something and it crashed into the farmer's field and it was not a savior from Krypton.
Probably not a savior from Krypton.
A demigod. No, just a plain god.
Just a plain god.
God on earth.
It was Omni-Man and then he ripped them all in half. No.
What, 17 years?
Oh my god, I love Invincible. Okay, so the boys were all eager to check out the site of the destruction.
I'll bet you the only thing that Omni-Man really wants in life is pictures of Spider-Man.
Fuck off. Oh my god.
I need photos of Spider-Man.
Spider-Man.
He's a menace.
He's a criminal.
We're deep within our own mythology right now.
Good lord. Every day we stray further from God's light.
God's light. Enough. We make our own light around here.
Damn straight.
That's right.
All right. So, four boys playing on the playground, see spooky shit, crashes, bang. Oh my god, we need pictures of Spider-Man. So they run home to alert Freddie and Edward's mother, Kathleen May, who in turn notified Eugene Lemon, a member of the National Guard that she was acquainted with, and the group and the family dog, Richie.
Acquainted.
In quotes, acquainted. But the group and the family dog, Richie,
Uncle Gene,
set off to see what mysterious thing had crashed
who sometimes sleeps home. Over.
Oh my god.
I'm just throwing it out there.
Very possibly. Very possibly.
Episode, on a very special episode of Grey's Anatomy.
Anyway.
Previously on This Is Us.
Can we get back to our little Monster of the Week session here?
Yes, let's hear about the Flatwoods monster, Braxty.
Thank you. So, as they approached the deeply wooded area surrounding the crash site, they saw a pulsating red light from within the trees. And with trembling hand, Eugene aimed his flashlight in the direction of the ominous glow, and from out of the blanket of thick, sickening mist, they saw levitating above the forest floor a 10-foot-tall creature.
Not okay.
In a dress made of what appeared to be a dark metal, with twisted and spindly hands reminiscent of claws, and a spade-shaped head with burning red eyes staring back at them.
Okay, but this is Pride Month, and this sounds a lot like either Hedwig and the Angry Inch or Priscilla, Queen of the Desert, and I'm okay with both of those.
Yeah! Dude, I fucking love the Flatwoods Monster. Just big chillin'. Probably a gay icon.
Cue the Dancing Queen by ABBA. I can hear it. I know. We can't. I don't know if we can listen to it because it's Creative Commons, but whatever.
Probably.
Everybody not. Knows the song.
You all know.
Play it at that moment.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So, as they. Are you about to say something?
If I'm going through the woods chasing after a comet, and then I go there and it's not a smoking crater, but instead it's a red orb glowing and flashing, turning around and going back home.
But see, the difference is
nothing this good. One, this comes from both. That sort of thing happening. Nothing good like that comes from that happening in all of places west fucking Virginia.
That's entirely true. But this one was both. It was a smoking crater with a very gross smelling mist and a weird red pulsating light that had a gigantic monster.
Nothing can come from this. Go ahead. Keep going. These guys, you know, they don't listen to me. Nobody listens to me.
They certainly do not. So, flashlight pointed at the Flatwoods Monster, and as they stared in horror at the monster, it let out a piercing hiss and descended from the hill.
Oh, come on.
Making its way right for them. With increasing speed, it chased them through the woods as they ran back to the tree line and into the open. After this incident, Eugene and Kathleen reported the incident to the police, who, after investigating the supposed area of the crash site, found nothing.
Yeah.
No trace of Braxy.
No trace of
the except for monster. The family trauma.
Mm-hmm.
The real monster was the trauma we made along the way.
That's right.
However, this was not the only reported encounter of the Flatwoods Monster, of course. September 13th, the day after the first encounter, in a town about 20 miles southwest of Flatwoods, and this town was called Strange Creek, which I fucking love, because if there is ever a more perfect name for a West Virginia town, Strange Creek, that's gotta be up there.
That's awesome.
Now a new encounter happens here, this time affecting George and Edith Snitowski, along with their 18-month-old baby boy.
George and Edith.
And the Flatwoods Monster eats the baby! No, it doesn't eat the baby.
You'd like if that happened.
Fuck them kids.
Oh my god.
So the family
was... You know what's going to happen, don't you?
What?
One of these days, you're going to fall in love with a woman, and she's going to end up having, like, 5 kids. And you're going to be the guy who fucking loves it, who, like, goes out and buys a fucking minivan, and you're like, this is the best moment of my life, and I'm going to remember every time you said, fuck them kids.
I am not ready to become an emotionally detached stepfather yet, so...
But that day will come.
Maybe.
Yeah.
Maybe I'll be an emotionally detached regular father. Who knows? The point is, I'm not ready for it.
When it happens, you come and see me, because I'll be in Dadville waiting for you, and I'll say, welcome.
Yeah, uh-huh.
We've been expecting you.
Yeah, okay.
It's going to happen.
Maybe.
You'd be so happy. You're going to be the guy at the daddy-daughter dance. You are. You can be a kindergarten graduation, just like me.
Kindergarten graduation? Fucking stupid.
Don't be an asshole. Anyway. Cue the Vitamin C song.
Anyway.
Cue the Benny Blanco song.
Oh my fucking god.
Go ahead. I'm sorry. I'm done now.
The family of three was driving down Route 4 in a rural area. One of those long, mind-numbing roads with nothing but tall trees and spooky deer to bless your vision.
As long as the deer stay where they fucking are, we could ride that. We could ride that on our bikes.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And as long as the deer have the appropriate amount of heads, eyes. Legs, and eyes. Mm-hmm.
As long as they're not deer. As long as they're not deer.
That's as long as they're not deer. Okay, so let's see. One of those super long, boring, like, just fucking blow your brains out, numbing roads. And what happens to them on this endless stretch of nowhere?
The Flatwoods Monster.
The car dies first.
Okay, of course.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
After a little while of trying to figure out what to do with the car not starting back up and no other vehicles to be seen for miles, The Snitowskis notice something bizarre. A smell of sulfur in the air.
Sulfur?
Sulfur in the air. Causing their wee lad to cry.
In my profession, I know what sulfur means.
Yes, we do.
You never want to smell sulfur in your house.
No.
For no reason.
You genuinely do not. That's a terrible, terrible warning sign.
That is a bad indicator.
That's some bad news bears right there, my friend.
You got to nope the fuck out of the house. You just walk straight towards the door. Don't look back, right or left. Whoever can get in the car with you gets to survive.
But otherwise, fuck them kids.
Get in the car. Let's go. Get in the car.
Mm-hmm.
Sulfur in the house for no reason. Get in the car.
Deuces.
Sorry, guys.
But they notice the smell of sulfur in the air. Now their baby is crying. And what comes next? A strange bright light. And within it, the 10-foot-tall silhouette of a monster hovering over the front of their car.
Not good.
With its spotlight eyes on the couple, it dragged its gnarled fingers across the hood of the car.
What?
And with eyes locked on the family, it just drifted away into the distance. And when it was no longer visible, the car started back up again, allowing the couple to drive away as fast as they were able to. The Flatwood Monster literally just showed up to look cool as shit and then dip.
That's because the Flatwood Monster's a fucking queen.
Hell yeah, queen
shit. That is some serious queen energy right there, baby.
Fuck yeah, we love to see it.
I mean, when you think about it, when you put it through that lens, damn. Damn, oh, yeah. Bro. Production value.
Pride Month, baby.
Flash.
This is what we're here for.
Fabulous. Three words to describe the Flatwoods Monster. Fabulous.
Absolutely.
I love it.
God, I love Braxy so much.
I know. They are amazing.
They are a gay icon.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Because that sounds fucking fabulous.
God, that's so cool.
Cut the car. Oh, bring in the sulfur. Bring in the
sulfur.
Bright light. Emerge. Scratch across the thing. Gone. I'm gone.
And then
I'm
just
gone. I'm fucking gone.
The whole time maintaining eye contact and you just float away into
eye
the
contact.
Distance.
Fabulous. God. I love it.
Bad bitch.
Mm-hmm.
This is exactly the kind of shit that I would want to do as a cryptid.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Camp Cryptid, here we come. I'm still writing this because the Flatwood Monster is obviously a queen and they are in charge of, like, something.
Fuck, yeah.
I don't want to sound too stereotypical and say arts and crafts, but they're... Oh, theater, of course.
Theater.
There it is.
Of course.
There it is. The Flatwood Monster is the theater drama coach. Boom.
Oh, fuck yeah,
this,
dude.
This shit writes itself.
God, this is so good.
I gotta write that down. So good. Okay, keep going. I'm sorry.
All right. Now, only a few short days after the two encounters here, we hear another tale from Mrs. Audra Harper, a resident of Heaters, a town just 5 miles north of Flatwoods. Mrs. Harper said that while she and a friend were taking a walk into a store through town, they decided to cut through the woods for a shortcut. Speaking of gay pride,
mm-hmm.
This definitely sounds like a way to cover up the fact that she snuck out into the woods to go have her little lesbian love affair. In, like, I mean, you live, like, I know there's woods everywhere in West Virginia, right? But, like, there is a path to go to the store. It's the 50s. It's not the, like, 1910s.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You're going to cut through the woods for it? No. You're out there living your best life, and I love that for you.
I feel bad that you have to hide around, but it's the 1950s. You know, it was illegal to be black and Mexican back then, too, so.
That's true. America sucks.
America does suck. It hasn't gotten in much better since then, but keep going.
Only barely.
Only barely.
All right, so anyway, as the story goes, the official on-record story says that Mrs. Audra Harper and her friend were cutting through the woods as a shortcut to get to a store, which, I mean, for one thing, is like rule number two of what not to do, especially in like the monster-infested woods of West Virginia, but like, whatever, get your bag.
Yeah, that's true.
But Harper says that while they were walking through the woods, she and her friend noticed high upon the hill they were passing what looked like a ball of fire.
I know what it is. It is the fabulous Flatwoods Monster.
God, got that fucking Kiss level production.
I am you. Fucking loving them.
Oh my God.
And I think it's awesome. Like, I started out with dread, but I'm like, oh, I wish now I was Miss Audra Harper right now. Oh my and God. I wish I could see the descent of this queen coming down from the sky in the ball of light to be fabulous.
Fucking love it. This, okay. This is why I love cryptids, because we don't even really get like a scare factor to them now. We just think about how great they are and how much we really want to see them.
Oh yeah.
Who doesn't love the fucking Van Meter Visitor or the Fresno Nightcrawlers?
I know.
Or the Flatwoods Monster? Oh yes. My God, it's all just so good. Even I just want to be their friend.
I know, even in the right light, a chupacabra could be great.
Right? Just a funky little dog thing.
Yeah.
Ah, so good.
Like, oh, look, he's humping the leg of that of that, you know, what do they call those things? The deer, the fake deer
not
that are
deer.
Out there. No, not the not deer. Like when you go hunting, you put a decoy. That's
oh,
it.
Oh, the decoy.
Oh, look, the chupacabra's humping the decoy. Isn't that hilarious? Because
oh,
to
no.
me, the chupacabra's on the same level as a high energy chihuahua.
Yeah, it's just a chihuahua that's like bigger and given fangs.
Yeah.
That's essentially all it is.
Yeah.
So, Harper and her friend notice a ball of fire high upon the hill that they were passing, and when she turned around to look again, the fireball was gone, and in the smoke where the fire had been stood an enormous humanoid figure, floating off the ground, staring at them with glowing red eyes as the pair ran away as quickly as they could.
How lucky. For you to be able to experience that greatness.
Truly blessed.
Truly blessed.
Hashtag blessed.
Praise be.
Oh my God. Can you imagine you're walking in the woods, potentially with your lesbian lover, and you look up and you see a ball of fire in the sky.
And you're afraid.
And you double take, and then arms outstretched with horrible claw fingers and a big pointy head and glowing red eyes, you see Braxy in all their glory. Just boot scoop boogieing.
Flatwoods Monster is a queen.
Oh my God.
I'm loving every moment of this.
And there are a couple other notable reports of the Flatwoods Monster. However, most of them just kind of tend to be the same thing. You know, they saw something in the distance, there was a weird mist, and in the mist they saw the figure standing there with its glowing eyes, and it let out a hiss. A lot of the basic ones, I kind of chose some of the more exciting ones here.
The Flatwoods Monster. We were not ready for your coming.
We were not, but we are now.
Oh, we
Please
are ready
come
now.
Hang out with us.
70 years later,
we're ready for
it. We are so ready.
But this is not where the story quite ends.
Awesome.
One little bullet point here, technically two. Mm-hmm. There is some speculation as to whether or not the Flatwoods Monster, what they are. You know, some people believe that it's a cryptid, maybe from another dimension or another plane of existence.
Yeah. Ultra-terrestrial.
Of course, some people think that it's an airplane beacon, because there had been some that were known to be in the area at the time. Maybe a crash landed, blah,
maybe
blah,
it was
blah.
Some gas. Maybe it was a weather balloon.
Exactly. Some people said it was something passing from the meteor that was coming by during that first visit. And of course, somebody wants to say it was just a barn owl.
Are you serious?
It's never a fucking barn owl.
Oh my God.
Barn owls do not get to 10 feet tall with glowing red eyes.
Zero number of times it's been in a barn owl.
It is never a barn owl, so you can go fuck yourself. Oh my God. But one of the other big speculations here is that Braxy is an alien visitor here to observe the exciting land of West Virginia. Now, of course, there is actually some detailed points to the alien theory,
mm-hmm.
Which tends to be the most commonly accepted theory that, you know, Braxy's an alien instead of a cryptid. I'm going to say cryptid because I fucking love it. But There's, of course, the interference with electronics in the vehicle, shutting down the car as they were going.
Which we've seen in extraterrestrial encounters before.
Of course we have. The crash landing, the mysterious mist that appeared, bizarre metal clothing, or clothing that has a metallic look to it. Also, the first sighting takes place only 5 years after the Roswell incident.
Mm.
So the idea of UFOs and extraterrestrials is pretty much in the forefront of everybody's mind, and this is lending some credibility to the idea that maybe we've got ourselves a little alien pal here. But regardless of what they choose to identify as, what they may be, we fucking love the Flatwoods Monster. And we'll never know for sure, because after a short time, they just kind of dipped. And I am forever heartbroken that I did not get to see the Flatwoods Monster. But that's the story.
That was awesome.
Hell yeah.
Flatwoods Monster, we were not ready for you then, but we're ready for you now.
We are ready for you now. Please give us your second coming.
I know, and pick a better place than West Virginia. San Francisco, California.
I was going to say come here to Texas, but no.
No, we're horrible down here. Now's not a good time for us.
I will say,
At Carnival.
Ooh.
Oh, Flatwoods, you would have so much fun down there.
Can you imagine how much fun Braxton would have in, like, Mardi Gras in Louisiana?
Fuck it up.
God. So cool.
Yeah, that's when you want to show up, because we would make you the belle of the ball.
Absolutely. Can you imagine how many beads Braxy would get? Doesn't even have to show anything.
All just of it.
Throw the beads.
You'd love it. Come back. Come back and we'll show you. We'll paint the town red.
Love it so much.
It'd be awesome.
But yeah, and one thing that I thought was good about this one, which differed from the last cryptid that I brought, the Van Meter Visitor, is that nobody tried to shoot this one, which is pretty surprising for West Virginia, but nobody tried to shoot at him. Because I felt so bad for the Van Meter Visitor, just hanging out, living life, looking around, and every single person took a shot or multiple at the Van Meter Visitor, and then the whole town showed up at its house to execute it firing squad style.
Yeah. If there's an extraterrestrial community out there, they probably look at us like the most backwards hillbilly people in the entire galaxy.
And they would be right.
And they would absolutely be right. They look at us the way that you look at the proto-apes in 2001, the movie.
Mm-hmm. Like, exactly.
Look how stupid they look. Look how dumb they are. Yeah. That's how they think of us.
Exactly.
We think we're so smart. No, we're not.
Yeah.
We're so stupid.
Yeah. That's good. Anyway, that is the Flatwoods Monster and a very brief summary on humankind. Boiled down to just, yeah, we're stupid. But anyway, I hope you all enjoyed that so much. And we will be taking a quick break now.
Yep, and we'll be right back.
Hello, we've returned. I didn't do an announcer voice.
Let's fish or cut bait.
What the fuck?
I'm not even sure which one that means. That's a white thing. That's a white guy thing. I never understood that one.
Ew.
What's good for the goose is good for the gander. Anyway, enough about that.
Shut the fuck up.
Okay, so listen. If you've been following our Instagram story, you know that I was trying to figure out whether or not I had been hexed.
Oh, yeah.
So about a week ago, maybe 2 weeks ago, I started noticing an unbelievably higher number of houseflies in my place. It went from 0 houseflies to 5 or 6 houseflies, which is just, I find them disgusting. I like to keep a clean house. I like to keep a clean litter box. So if there's houseflies in the house, it's gross to me. And then I noticed over the weeks that they were not stopping. And they would show up in like groups of like 5 or 6, and they'd be in the house, and it was just disgusting. It was gross.
Gross.
It's grossed out about it. So, you know, we've had a lot of rain over this last month. So that has to do part of it, you know. These eggs hatch when there's moisture, when there's humidity. There's a lot of moisture and humidity in this part of Texas anyway. It's about to stop raining, and it's not going to stop. And it's not going to rain again for like 5 or 6 months. So we're taking what we can get right now, right? What's really funny about that is that you never notice how much it rains, and you never pay attention to the weather forecast as much until you start riding a motorcycle or you start doing something that's dependent upon good weather, and now we're like always looking at it. every single day.
Constantly.
Is it going to rain? Can I ride my bike today? But anyway, so the flies are everywhere. The flies are everywhere. And I'm trying to figure out exactly what's going on. And the thing that I think of is, you know, I cleaned out my garage and now there's like a complete straight line of sight between the garage door and the pet door where Boomer goes out to use his litter box because the litter box is in the garage. And I'm thinking, okay, maybe the house flies are originating in the garage and they're making it through. So I try to do everything that I can to minimize, you know, why they would want to be in the house. And I cannot get rid of these house flies, right? To the point where I'm finding them in groups of 5 or 6 all over the house and I'm killing them. And then 20 to 30 minutes later, there's another group of 5 to 6 in the house. Mm-hmm. Okay. And so I start thinking about the Amityville house, where when the Lutzes moved in, there was one room, which was the sewing room where the little girls had, it was the little girl's room. Remember this?
Yes.
The little girl's room had been turned into a sewing room for the Lutzes. And the kids had died in that room. They'd been killed by their older brother. And there were times when they would go into that room and there would be a swarm of flies in that room.
Hell yeah.
And they would have to get out of the room and then the flies would disappear as quickly as they had appeared. Not to mention the fact that when the priest went on day one to go and bless the house, that was where he heard somebody say get out. Well, in the movie, he heard somebody say get out.
Yeah.
But in the account, he just felt like there was a malevolent presence there and he left the house. So I'm thinking to myself, okay, I've tried to eliminate all of the practical reasons why there would be a swarm of houseflies in my house. You know, I checked to make sure that there weren't any like dead raccoon carcasses somewhere in my house. There wasn't anything dead in the crawl space above my house. You know, doors and windows are shut. There aren't any holes in any of those things. You know, there's no exposed food. The trash is always picked up. All of those sorts of things. So then I start thinking, okay, it's got to be one of two things. Either my neighbor, because I live in a duplex, my neighbor is a serial killer and he's got a dead body in that house.
A possibility, always. Which
is a possibility, we know. Or someone has tried to hex me.
Also a possibility.
Also a possibility. So I do the only thing that I can do. And today, on the 7th of June, which is a Monday, which is when we're recording, in the middle of the day when the sun was at its zenith, just kidding, I saged the house and I salted all the doors and windows.
Cool, cool. Smart.
And that was about, I don't know, maybe 8 hours ago, 7 hours ago. And there aren't any house flies in this house.
Fucking did it, man.
I don't know why it worked, but it worked.
Brujeria.
Because it was getting ridiculous. I killed like 4 flies last night, and then I went to take a shower, and I was in the shower for about 20 minutes, showering and brushing my teeth to get ready for bed, and I came back out to get a drink of water, and there were like 5 more flies in the house. And I'm like, where the fuck are they coming from? Somehow the brujeria worked. Man. I have no idea.
But you fixed it, and that's what's important.
That's right.
And now the curse is lifted, and I am able to re-enter the home.
Let's hope so. I was wondering whether or not you'd be able to enter the home because I salted it.
Yeah, it was 50-50.
I wasn't sure. But you walked right in.
So. I think apparently. I've just been invited in enough times that I built up your immunity. So.
That's true. Yeah. Okay, I'm going to start in my topic. Oh my God, it's so crazy.
Groovy.
Okay, we're going to be talking about the DuPont de Ligonnès murders.
Ooh, fancy.
Okay, here we go.
Hit me with it.
The DuPont de Ligonnès, I don't know how to say it. It's French, man.
De blah, blah, blah.
The murders and disappearance involved the murder of 5 members of the same family in Nantes, France, followed by the disappearance of the patriarch of the family, Xavier Pierre Marie DuPont de Ligonnès.
Cool, cool.
So 5 members of a family were killed, and then the father disappears. All right. In April of 2011, Agnès DuPont de Ligonnès and her 4 children, along with the family's 2 dogs, were murdered, and their bodies were found later on. Xavier disappeared at the same time and has not been found as of today.
Oh.
10 years later.
Yikes.
The exact nature of the events has never been determined, but Xavier is the subject of an international arrest warrant and is considered the prime suspect in the murders.
Damn.
In case you didn't notice, they have a really, really French-ass name. the DuPont de Ligonnès family is actually an old French aristocratic family. Okay? This guy's actually a count, for Christ's sake.
Oh, shit.
He is a count, baby. He's a count. So, in 1961, the patriarch of the family, Xavier Pierre Marie DuPont de Ligonnès, was born. His father, Bernard, again, was a count. He was an engineer, and his activities, he was a businessman, but it was always really hard to figure out exactly what kind of businessman he was. He had a lot of different businesses. He's like, oh, I'm a businessman. Well, what do you do? And it was never really one of those things, you know?
That's sketchy. I'm an
accountant. Really? Where do you work? At a place where accountants work. What do you do?
What accountants do.
Mm-hmm. Accountants. So he created a couple of different businesses with limited success, most of which catered to traveling salespeople and restaurants. One of these businesses was called SELREF, like all caps. It had a secretive and ambiguous defined purpose. The company's 2006 accounts, which are accessible through a commercial, public commercial website, only show the bare minimum information, and the last data pertaining to this company was filed with the Commerce Department in 2004. As a manager of this company, he hired six salespeople in 2003, and then released them all shortly afterwards. So it's like real shady shit.
Yeah, that's sketchy.
Real weird. Real weird. But Xavier was a nice guy. I watched a documentary about him and about this thing. He was really nice, very gregarious, very upbeat, very, you know, just like a man's man, you know? Mm-hmm. Really nice guy. When he was like 21, he met his future wife, Agnes. And Agnes was about 16 years old at the time. And she was just in love with him. And they were together for about 2 or 3 years. And then he decided that he wanted to travel for about a year. He wanted to travel abroad. And so he broke up with her.
Aww.
Right? And when he came back, he decided that he wanted to, he came back from traveling, from sowing his wild oats, and he decided that Agnes was the love of his life. Well, she was pregnant with another dude's kid at the time. But he loved her, and so not only did he marry her, but he adopted this kid as his firstborn son.
Okay.
Okay.
I can't tell if this is good or not yet, so I'm trying to hold off on affirmations.
This plays heavily into the end of the story.
Oh, no.
So they get married. They have three more kids. Agnes becomes an assistant at a Catholic school very close to their home. Her duties involved teaching catechism class. She was described as being very religious. She regularly attended mass with her children, and she was strict with them, but she loved them. She was a very doting mother, right? Let's see here. Their first son. Remember Arthur. Arthur is the first son. He was born in 90. But you know, he had another dad. So Xavier wasn't actually his dad. But Xavier recognized him as being his son when he married Agnes. They were 2 years old. He was actually 2 years old when they finally got married. Xavier was born in 91, so that would make him this happened in 2001? No. When did this happen? He was born in 90. And this happened in 2011. So he's 21 at the time.
Okay.
Right? Yes. No. Yes, it is. 21. When were you born? 99, right?
99.
Right. So he's 21 at the time. He had already graduated. And he was studying for a technical diploma in IT at a St. Gabriel private college. An hour away from Nantes, where they family lived. He was also employed as a waiter, and he had a girlfriend. He's 20 years old at the time of his death. Thomas, the second son, was born in 92. He had a bachelor's degree in literature, which he earned when he was 17. He was very passionate about music. He studied at a Catholic university to the west in Angiers. And he lived in one of the dorms, and his friends described him as an ordinary boy. He's very close to his family. His family always picked him up and dropped him off from college. He was 18 at the time. Then there was a daughter whose name was Anne. She was born in 94. She was in the 11th grade, and she was very, very studious. She was studying to be some sort of scientist. Like, that was her track. She was very approachable. She was very friendly, obviously, right? Mm-hmm. And was 16. It was very uncommon for her. During the time of during the time when they were killed, she was offline. She was very friendly with her friends and very had an online presence.
Okay.
And then the youngest son was born in 97, so that would make him 14 years old at the time when he was killed, and his name was Benoit. He was an altar boy at the Catholic Church.
Aww.
Mm-hmm. So the family live in this really nice apartment, but there were some weird things that happened in the weeks to the days before they disappeared.
Please tell me about the weird things. Mm-hmm.
The lease on the house had been terminated. All the bank accounts were closed. The children's schools received a final pay settlement for tuition. Agnes's employer was informed that she was suffering from gastroenteritis and that she was moving to Australia. And also, a neighbor walked by the house and noticed that there was a note on the letter box, you know,
mm-hmm.
that said, "Please return all correspondence to sender. Thank you." Like, please return to sender. Hmm.
Okay.
Right.
Sketchy.
Right. So, it's just crazy. Here's what happens. On Friday, hold on, give me one second here. I got to come back to this. There we go. On Friday, April the 1st, Arthur, the oldest child, left college where he was studying, and he does not return back to the pizzeria where he worked. He was due to pick up his monthly wages. So April the 1st is the first day that his employer figures it out. Apparently, they only get paid once a month, which is fucking crazy.
Yeah, that's weird.
His boss was surprised because Arthur was always there to collect his wages on the first day of the month, right?
Mm-hmm.
On April the 3rd, a neighbor saw Agnes for the last time that she saw her. Shortly afterwards, she saw Xavier putting large bags into his car. He had a Citroen C5, which is a sedan, probably the size of about a Kia.
Okay.
So all of these things, like, these are all establishing a timeline. The couple and three of the children actually ate at a restaurant that night on April the 3rd, and then they went to the movies. Right? Because remember, one of the sons is off in college, right? So the oldest son, and then the daughter, and then the youngest son are at home at the time of the murders. The middle son is away.
Okay. This
plays heavily into the end of the story.
Oh, no.
Oh, my God. At 10:37 that night of April 3rd, Xavier leaves a message on his sister Christine's answer phone, voicemail. It wasn't a correct translation. He says, "We spent our Sunday evening in the cinema together, then in a restaurant, and we just got back. I'm just calling to ask if it's too late to speak to you on the phone, and now I see it's gone to voicemail. But I was surprised. You spoke to me about Bertram, who's getting ready for his flight, huh? But I thought he'd only just arrived, so I was a bit surprised. Anyway, sending you my love. If it's not too late, call me back or send me a text, and I'll call you. Okay, I'm going to put the kids to bed, say hi to everyone, see you soon, maybe." There we go. That's what he leaves, the voicemail.
Okay.
On April the 4th, which is a Monday, Anne and Benoit, the youngest kids, do not turn up at their school due to illness. Anne and Benoit's friends become concerned when they are unable to reach them. They remember a rumor about the family leaving for Australia, where their father had been given a job transfer, and they find it suspicious that their friends hadn't told them about this departure. They attempt to contact Benoit and Anne online and by text, but are unable to, which is suspicious. Is it not?
It is indeed quite suspicious.
Mm-hmm. Xavier, on April the 4th of Monday, speaks with his sister, Christine, on the telephone for about 20 to 30 minutes, and everything seems to be normal. Okay. On this day, Xavier takes his son Thomas to a restaurant. Thomas is the second-born son.
Okay.
Okay. The pair arrived at about 9 o'clock. Xavier ordered a bottle of wine and an appetizer platter.
Mm-hmm.
Thomas had sea bass and tomato juice. The two waiters remember that Thomas felt unwell near the end of the meal and that Xavier and Thomas barely spoke to each other during the meal. So it's just so weird.
Yeah.
Right?
All kinds of weird shit. And I am horrified to see where this story goes. Mm-hmm.
So, on Tuesday, the April 5th, a bailiff, which apparently means something different over there.
Okay.
Comes to the family home to recover a debt of 20,000 euros. But no one answers the door.
That is a lot of euros.
Mm-hmm. So some neighbors say that they saw Agnes around her house on April the 5th and even on April the 7th. But they're, you know, it's just like he said, she said, there's all this other stuff. They're not exactly sure exactly when the family didn't see them. Mm. An employee of a hairdressing salon claims to have seen Agnes on April the 5th, which was a Tuesday. So it's just really weird. A friend of Thomas who studied music with him confirmed that Thomas spent Tuesday afternoon with him at his friend's house in Angiers, where they played music and watched television. Remember, Thomas wasn't in home at the time. Thomas had planned to spend the night at his friend's house. Here we go. But Xavier phoned him on Tuesday the 5th and asked him to return to Nantes and that his mother had been involved in a cycling accident. He told him that his mother was in a coma and that he was unsure if she was going to survive.
Yikes. Okay. Mm-hmm.
Thomas ate quickly with his friend and then took a train home at around 10 p.m. The following day, the friend tried to reach Thomas but only received a brief text message in reply that said, "I'm not coming to yours. I'm ill. And really ill. I'm not coming to class." 2 days after Thomas's departure, his friend received a text that said, "I'm out of battery. My dad's looking for a new charger for me." This was the last time that they heard from him. Thomas's ex-girlfriend, who was his girlfriend at the time, she was also his classmate, remembers being very lighthearted, cheerful, and happy. She stated that they didn't date for long, but described him as a really nice guy who always listened to what you had to say, very close to his brothers and sisters, passionate about music. She had spoken to him on Facebook on April the 5th while he was at his friend's house, and that he had seemed odd in the way that he was writing. When he told her, his father told him his mother had been in a cycling accident. Thomas had to return home that same day. She noticed that he seemed lonely at the time, and he told her that he would skip classes on Wednesday to come to a music rehearsal, but he did not show up at the rehearsal, which was not like him. During this week, before the 5th, somewhere in there, the neighbors can remember hearing the family dogs howling for two nights in a row, and then never heard them again.
Oh, no.
Yes. Okay, so the plot fucking thickens. A family friend who kept going by the house was concerned that all of the shutters were closed and none of the lights were on, which was very uncommon for the family.
Sketchy.
Every time they would leave the house, they would always leave the shutters open. Lights were on. Not all the, I don't know. But even when they went on vacation, they always left some of these lights on, or they had somebody watch the dogs, but there's no activity coming from the house. So this neighbor decides that she's going to contact the police because she's worried about it. It's out of the ordinary. So the police come to the door and knock on the door, and no one comes to the door. So they get a locksmith to open up the house.
Smart.
Mm-hmm. The police search the home and find open closets and bedsheets missing. Some of the photos had been taken out of their frames on the wall. The only thing that was seemed to be the strangest thing about this was that Xavier Citroen C5 was gone. Right.
Okay.
But there's no way that a family of six can fit into the Citroen C5 plus the dogs plus the luggage.
Yeah, not
if they move to Australia.
Not some tiny little baby car.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. There's no way. There's too many of them. Right. All in all, the police visit the home five times and find nothing. They visited on April 13th, April 15th, April 18th, April 19th, and April 20th. And don't find anything when they're searching, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's like the family just fucking Kaiser Soze'd.
Yeah.
On April 6th, Arthur's girlfriend, Arthur is the oldest son, was concerned about not having heard from him. So she knocks on the door of the family home. She noticed that there was a light on the first floor, but the family's two Labradors didn't bark. Several witnesses on April the 7th seem to think that they saw Agnes alive, but they're not sure. What is confirmed is that Xavier was seen making several return trips from the house to his car, loading the car with large bags.
That's never a good sign.
Not good. One of the neighbors thinks that she saw Agnes on April the 7th walking the dog. But it's not so sure. She says that they spoke briefly, but that she had to cut their chat short because she had to get back to the babysitter. The babysitter was watching the kid. She says the newspapers, this neighbor says the newspapers say the autopsies put the death on April the 4th, but I'm almost convinced I saw her on the evening of Thursday the 7th. On April the 8th, Xavier writes on the Catholic online forum Went online for the he was on this Catholic forum, and they noticed that he put a post on there, like on a message board. He also sent an email to his brother-in-law that said, "Everything's fine, Bertram. You'll hear more detailed news soon through Christine. Bye for now. All the best, Xavier." Another message was sent to his mother and his sister from the family's home IP address. And the lawyer confirms this, right?
Okay.
That this message, this seemingly innocuous message, was sent. On Monday, April the 11th, Anne and Benoit's schools receive a letter signed by Xavier stating that Anne and Benoit will be leaving the school and the family will be moving to Australia due to urgent professional changes. The Catholic school where Agnes worked receives a resignation letter signed by Agnes stating the same reason for leaving, but the headmaster is unable to reach her by telephone. Then, the weirdest part, not really the weirdest part, stranger part, keeps getting stranger, a typed but unsigned 8-page letter.
Okay.
Is sent to Xavier's immediate family, so copies of it. On the 5th of May, which is a month after this, this letter was revealed to the press. In this letter, Xavier explains that are you ready for this?
I'm so horrified.
That after having worked covertly for the DEA in the United States, the entire family was going to have to relocate as part of the Federal Witness Protection Program.
What the fuck?
This is what his letter says.
What the
fuck? Not signed and not dated. And printed off on computer paper.
Damn, they M. Night Shyamalan'd us with that one.
And that they would not be able to contact anybody for a few years. He advises his relatives to circulate reports on social media that the family has, in fact, moved to Australia. But, again, there is no proof that this letter was written by Xavier. To this day, results of DNA analysis are unknown. So, I mean, you know, like I said, it's just super suspicious, this letter.
Yeah, obviously very suspicious.
Mm-hmm. So, here's where it gets even weirder. Here's what we know from traffic cameras and from credit card receipts. That Xavier starts off, the western part of France. He starts traveling down the west coast, going towards the southeast of France, towards Italy. Okay. In his Citroen C5.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. He spends the night of April the 11th and the 12th at a hotel in Blagnac near Toulouse in southern France, pays for it by his credit card. He then leaves in a Citroen C5. On Tuesday, April the 12th, he spends the night of the 12th and the 13th in Le Ponet in Vaucluse in southeastern France under the false name of Mr. Laurent Xavier, and he pays by credit card. On April the 13th, neighbors in Nantes become concerned and contact the police. The house's shutters have been closed for more than a week, and Agnes's car has been parked outside on the street the entire time. On that same day, on April 13th, Xavier spends the night from the 13th to the 14th at a hotel in La Seine-sur-Mer in Var, southeastern France. He had lived there in the 1980s, and a former girlfriend at that time informed police later on that Xavier had contacted her, but they did not meet up. On Thursday, April the 14th, Xavier withdraws 30 euros from an ATM in Var, and that evening, Xavier sleeps at a Formula One hotel in the same town, where he is captured on surveillance camera. This is the last known sighting of him.
Okay.
He's seen carrying a long bag, possibly a rifle bag, over his shoulder, walking across the parking lot. It should be noted that this part of the southern France has a mountain range that's very close. On April 15th, Xavier checks out of the hotel, abandons his car, and just fucking disappears.
What?
He's gone.
Oh my god.
Just like that.
Like tears in the rain.
Like tears in the rain. So, on April 21st, the police visit the home a sixth time.
Okay.
And they start searching.
Oh no.
And they find a gruesome discovery.
Oh no.
During that day, investigators discover the remains of Agnes and the four children buried in shallow graves underneath the patio in the back garden of the house.
Oh, shit.
Mm-hmm. The family's two Labradors had also been killed and buried.
Oh, no. Now I'm sad.
Mm-hmm. Fucking grisly.
Oh, fuck them kids with the dogs.
Mm-hmm. And the dogs. The mother, the oldest son, the younger brother, and the sister. Right? were all buried together with the dogs in one shallow grave. They're wrapped in blankets from the home, and each of them has some sort of religious item in the bag with them. Okay. Crucifix, rosary, saint card, something. Each of them had some sort of religious iconography with them.
Hell yeah.
The second oldest son, Thomas, the natural born son, remember that, is buried, the only one that wasn't at the home at the time. Remember, his dad had to call him and say, your mother's been in a horrible accident and I need you to come home.
Yeah.
He was buried in his own separate grave since he was away at school when the other family members were killed. That's what they figure. All family members had traces of a sleeping agent in their systems, according to the toxicology reports. Each had been shot twice in the head with a 22 long rifle bullet, which a 22 bullet is pretty small.
Yeah.
22 long rifle has more powder to it, so it's longer. You can get a pistol that has that fires 22 long rifle. You can get an actual rifle that fires 22 long rifle. It'll work on either one. Forensic analysis of the bags reveal no fingerprints. Analysis of the inside of the home show no traces of blood anywhere. And no fingerprints of anybody who didn't belong in the house. Right?
Mm-hmm.
Something that should be noted is that the patio was quite low, less than 4 feet tall. And someone would have had to stoop to dig the graves and bury the bodies. So that plays heavily into the end of the story. Let me see here. I want to make a note here. I need to get back to the timeline. You're going to fucking flip out the next part that I say.
Oh, no. Oh, no.
Oh, my God. So let's go back to the timeline. In March of 2011, before all of this happened, Xavier had purchased rifle bullets on March 12th. And he had registered at a shooting range to the north of Nantes, where he visited four times between March 26th and April the first, and he had obtained his firearms license. Thomas and Benoit had also started learning how to shoot while Arthur was doing this. The thing is, his father, Xavier's father, the grandfather of all these kids, had died, and he had left kind of an inheritance, and one of the things that he had left was a 22 caliber rifle.
Ooh.
And so now Xavier's got it, and he's learning how to shoot. A sales receipt from a DIY store was found at the family home. The receipt was dated Wednesday in late March, and it included several purchases, including a roll of large bin liners, a box of adhesive plastic, and paving slabs.
Okie dokie.
At some point in April, Xavier had bought cement, a shovel, and a hoe. And on April the 2nd, they've got a receipt that shows that he bought four bags of lime from different shops in Nantes, which is just so sad. So he had been a busy bee.
Sounds to be.
Mm-hmm. So April 21st, remember, this is the same day that they found the bodies. Metallic blue Citroen C5 was found in the parking lot of the Formula One hotel. And so they figured out, you know, this is Xavier's car. Once they found out there was a murder, they put out the all points bulletin.
Yeah.
And it doesn't take them long to figure it out. Plus, they've got credit card receipts. And so they're able to monitor where he's going. At one point, there's a monastery there. And they started to question some of the folks there because they wanted to see if he'd gone there for, like, you know, sanctuary. That sort of thing.
Yeah.
On April 22nd, the bodies were autopsied. According to the autopsies, like I mentioned again, the victims were drugged and then shot twice. Each of them got double tapped in the head with a 22 long rifle as they slept. Again, Xavier had just inherited a caliber rifle of the same size a couple of weeks before the murders. The prosecutor states that at the same time, he allowed the bodies to be released and buried, which was kind of weird. The family members who think that there was some sort of cover-up talk about how quickly they were allowed to be released, how quickly the funeral happened, and then immediately after the funeral, the remains were cremated.
That's weird and sketchy.
Yes. An international arrest warrant was issued to try to find Xavier. The family was buried on the 20th of April, so just a week after they were found. It caused uproar. I mean, people were just so sad about it. In the documentary that I watched, the headlines in the newspapers called it the House of Horrors.
That makes a lot of sense.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. There were 1,400 people who attended the funeral. It was a simple ceremony, neither flowers nor wreaths. Significant security was provided. They were told that nobody could see the bodies. That was one of the things that they talked about. Was that possibly the bodies were never identified by family members? But that's a little bit thin. Again, they're just trying to figure out exactly where he went. On June 23rd, remember there was a mountain range there's also caves. They actually sent caving experts out there, and they did a manhunt with like fucking search and rescue and helicopters, because one of the theories was that Xavier had gone out there with that rifle because he was going to shoot himself.
Woof.
And again, one of the things that they found, of course, when they're doing their investigative work, they look into the financials, because this all points to the dad killing the family. It's family annihilation.
Yeah.
He had money troubles.
Mm-hmm.
And his dad had died and didn't have any money to give him either. So you've got this guy who's basically from French aristocracy who can't keep a business running, who's got all these money troubles. He's got creditors coming to his house looking for 20,000 euros at the same, all in one place. And he's got no way to do it. And then suddenly his family dies.
Yeah, that's incredibly sketchy.
Apparently by his own hand. And then he travels. But at the same time, he was going he was not in a rush. It was like he was on fucking holiday. Stays in a night here, stays a night here, stays a night here. If he really wanted to, you know, if he was really trying to get away, he would have driven the whole way or slept in his car and just got the fuck out of Dodge.
I mean, unless he knew he was going to be watched and he wanted to make it seem like he wasn't in a rush.
Maybe so.
Could be a possibility. Mm-hmm. But either way, he's still being sketchy.
He doesn't know how long it's going to take them, or does he?
Or does he?
How does he know that the cops are going to be able to go to his house 5 times before they find the bodies? So some of it just doesn't add up. The investigation has been continuing since 2011, and they have had more than 800 tips. But most of them have been dead ends.
Damn.
Before his disappearance, Xavier attempted to make contact with several old friends. The police have spent more than 2 years looking for someone named Claudia, who was a German woman that he almost married in the early 80s, and he had kept in contact with. They can't find her. German police had launched an appeal for witnesses. This appeal was abandoned when Xavier's sister and brother-in-law noticed that the file included their email addresses, so they had to recant that.
Oh my God.
He had created a company in the United States with a friend of his who was a French immigrant, and so they tried to do some investigation into Xavier in the United States, but he was never able to. He had actually tried to move his family to Florida and spent a lot of money trying to set it up, but for whatever reason, he wasn't able to immigrate to the United States, and so not only did they lose a lot of money, but they weren't able to come to the United States.
Oh, fuck.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's a big yikes.
Yeah. I told you that there was a mountain range to the southeast of France where they last saw him. They had cave divers looking for him. They had search and rescue, 50 police officers and firefighters who specialized in searching dangerous and hard to access locations, found nothing.
Oof.
Mm-hmm. One of the prosecutors doesn't think that Xavier's a suspect, leans towards the belief that he committed suicide. They don't think that he's an active suspect. But they're not sure. They haven't found him. In 2013, a body was found 20 kilometers, which is 12 miles away, mm-hmm. from where Xavier was last seen. But an autopsy carried out couldn't completely exclude the possibility that it was him. But they were like, no, it can't be him. For whatever reason. Right? On April 28th of 2015, a person walking discovered bones in a forest near the south of France. where he was last seen. The police made a link with Xavier's disappearance and analyzed what appeared to be a survival camp where other objects were discovered, including an empty wallet, a lighter, a pair of glasses, a sleeping bag, a magazine, and a bill dating from 2011. A medical pin was also allegedly found in the unknown person's forearm bone. But as far as they are aware, Xavier never had a medical device in his arm, and so it was inconclusive as to whether it was there. In mid-July of 2015, a Nantes, which is the city where he was from, journalist received a photograph, and on the back of it was a handwritten note that said, "I'm still alive." The picture showed two of the kids, Arthur, the oldest, and Benoit, the youngest, sitting at a kitchen table. But it's not known where the picture came from or who sent the note.
Whoa, that's fucked.
In 2018, police raided that monastery in the south of France where they thought Xavier might be, right? Because several worshippers claimed that they had seen him there. Police initially, this is the craziest part, police initially struggled to make headway as the monks at the monastery had taken a vow of silence.
Oh, no.
But after a two and a half hour search, they determined that it must have been a case of mistaken identity because there was a guy there who kind of looked like him, but wasn't him. Well, I remember in the documentary, one of his actual close friends who was like, he's like, "I'll never forgive him for what he did. I think he killed his family." Mm-hmm. Says the thing about Xavier is he's of average height. He's of average weight. He doesn't have any noticeable scars or tattoos. He's very nondescript.
He
looks like everybody and he looks like nobody.
Man's is all middle sliders.
Yes. So it's just, it's just so weird. At one point in Glasgow in 2019, they thought he had him, but it turned out to be a guy who had his passport stolen and had to get a different passport. I mean, there's a lot to it, but what it comes down to is mistaken identity.
Yeah.
None of it ever clears out. They don't know where this guy went to.
There's just a whole bunch of average white dudes out there, and a bunch of them have murdered their entire family.
Yeah, because he speaks English, he speaks Spanish, he speaks French. I think maybe he speaks Portuguese as well, so there's all these places that he could have gone.
Good Lord.
You know? His sister started off by, this crazy 8-page letter, which I'm not going to read to you because it's just fucking crazy. Initially, she said that she doubted the authenticity, but and around March of 2012, she started saying that basically Xavier and his family left for the United States because their safety was threatened in France. The bodies found under the patio cannot be those of Agnes and the children. She believes that the information linked to the media originates from sources with an interest in making the family disappear. In 2013, she created a blog, and she mentions an email that her brother wrote to two friends in July of 2010. He wrote of accidents which may befall his family and ended with the words, "So I hope that even after a police investigation, my parents, brothers, and sisters will never be led to believe that I intentionally caused these accidents, even if the evidence is strong." Just crazy.
What the fuck, dude?
The family's lawyer says, "We don't even know when the victims were killed. The autopsy points to death between 10 and 21 days before their discovery. Such imprecision is truly astonishing. In reality, nothing is certain in this affair other than the fact that some bodies were found at the home. Investigations are carried out, but all they have allowed us to ascertain is that the bodies share the same DNA. No analysis has compared this common DNA with that of Agnes. Furthermore, my client confirms that the body's heights and weights do not correspond to the known dimensions of the family members. In my opinion, this constitutes negligence during the autopsy. But the autopsy allows Christine and Genevieve to step into the breach. What I also know is that one man alone cannot dig that hole under the patio, even a man blinded by rage and hatred. 3 1/4 cubic yards of earth were displaced to create these graves. But where is the rest of this? No one could ever find the dirt."
What the fuck? Really?
So there wasn't like piles of dirt laying off to the side.
Yeah.
It's gone. "This affair is based on the idea that Xavier killed his family before burying them. No other line of inquiry has ever been explored." Did you hear that just now? Ooh. There was like talking through my thing. Maybe it was my Siri.
Was it that?
Yeah.
I was loading up a video that I could watch later.
Oh my Jesus, you're scaring the shit out of me over here. All right. He says that he doesn't know who killed this family. Nothing about their lives would lead me to believe that anyone would have would have it in them to do the, to go this far. Christine, the sister, talks about no displaced earth. Remember?
Mm-hmm.
She says that the space underneath the patio is only four. It's under 4 feet high. The perpetrator would have had to be working on his hands and knees without long tools, because it's so short. You couldn't get a full size shovel in there.
Yeah.
Okay, so he buys a shovel and he buys a hoe, but there's no way he could get in there. She also mentions that no displaced earth was found in the garden, in which case the perpetrator would have had to have used a tarp and displaced 5 tons of earth by hand. I don't know that's whether that's accurate or not, but it had to have been a lot of dirt.
That's a lot of fucking dirt, though.
And left absolutely no trace of this in the home. Furthermore, Christine claims, his sister, that Xavier had neck and back problems and would have not been physically capable of such a task. That was something that one of his friends said. He always complained of back pain. For him to be under there digging these graves would have been excruciating. There's no way he could have done it.
My neck, my back.
Exactly. Finally, it is surmised that due to the low headroom, the perpetrator would likely have both banged their head and rubbed their hair on the ceiling, but no human skin cells, blood, or DNA were ever found there. Police, are we still recording? I can't hear.
Oh, hold on.
What are you doing over there?
Can you still hear it?
I can't. Yeah, okay, now I can.
Okay, yeah, we're still recording.
Okay, police received more than 900 reports from people who believed they had spotted Xavier. Most notably, some matching his physical description were caught on CCTV and casino in France. But to this date, he is still at large.
Fuck, dude.
And is wanted in questioning of the murder of his entire family.
Holy shit, man.
Nobody has found him. That is fucking crazy.
That is fucking crazy.
I can hear that. What is that? Fucking around. Are we recording?
Yes, we're still recording. Found out that you could hear things, so I started playing Evil Demon Voice on YouTube.
You're an asshole.
Yeah.
I hate you.
That's fair. Anyway, that was fucking crazy.
Wasn't it?
Good lord. There's a lot to that.
I know.
Layers after layers.
Like an onion.
I was going to say like an ogre. That's right. I can reference kids' movies.
How did you ever? Yeah, reference. I can't imagine you watching Shrek.
I was a kid once too.
Okay, that was my story. Listeners, we love you, and we want you to continue listening.
Yes, please do.
But we got some news for you. This is going to be our mid-season finale.
R.I.P.
And we're going to come back in about a month, maybe 2 months.
Yeah.
Dylan has landed a role he was born to play.
You're goddamn right.
Coming in August of 2021.
Dun 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 dun.
Dylan Cadenhead.
Dun 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 dun.
Is.
Dun 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 dun.
Tattoo Padawan. Dun 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 dun. Anyway, Dylan is going to start up his apprenticeship. He's going to be working 7 days a week, and he's got a lot on his fucking plate.
I do. I very
Not to mention crippling depression. And anxiety through the roof.
Oh, yeah.
Anxiety through the fucking roof. Anyway, so we're going to take a break from putting out full-size episodes, but here's what we're going to do. In the meantime, I'm going to go through and I'm going to start summarizing our previous episodes into 60-second sound bites, and I'm going to be posting those on our TikTok.
Hell yeah.
Also, we're probably going to be getting together every Tuesday night if we can and doing a live show for 5 to 10 minutes where I talk about a pop topic that I've learned about, and we get an update on Dylan's life and my life, and we talk to you guys. So we're going to be looking at that. Not only that, but I've decided that it is time for us to transition to video.
Hell yeah.
So I'm going to start making inroads into that. We've got camcorders that we can use, and we're going to learn how to we're going to learn how to record ourselves video and audio so that we can post our videos to YouTube and also post our audio at the same time, so we can have both formats going. And then I'm going to make some contact with friends of ours and see if they want to be on the show being interviewed video and audio. So we're going to have good things going. We're not going to leave you out in the lurch. We're still going to have content, just not full-size episodes for a while, so that Dylan can concentrate on his career and also his mental health.
Yeah, but we're not ending anything, obviously. I mean, we've taken season breaks before. That's no big deal.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, in the meantime, we do have a lot of things that we've got planned. Some really exciting stuff coming up. Jake was telling me about a lot of this stuff, and I think it's all fucking kick-ass ideas. Mm-hmm. And I'm really excited to see where we go from this. But yeah, I just need a little bit of time so that I can, you know, get my feet under me here. Because it'll be a transition. I'm still working one day a week at the retail job, and then the other six are going to be devoted to just working at the tattoo shop. And I mean, it's going to be 8 to 9 hour shifts like every day. So I've certainly got a lot. Don't really have the time to, you know, put together full topics and full episodes, but I'll still be doing what I can as I can. And I'm very excited for everything that's coming up. I know we've talked a lot about, you know, big things coming and, you know, making changes, and we, you know, we're slow and we're busy and we're sad, mainly me, but we're actually working on some stuff here, and I'm really excited for it.
But it's going to be great. It's going to be great. Like I said, we're not going to leave you in the lurch. We're going to still have content and we're going to still be engaged. So.
Hell yeah.
But we're excited where Dylan's going with this. I'm so proud of you, Dylan. I really am.
Thank you.
It's exciting.
Man, I'm so jazzed about this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Just don't be sad boy. Don't be jittery boy about it. Or be, but know that I'm here for you in any way that I can. But I'm also going to make fun of you a little bit.
Too. Oh, yeah. No,
you gotta add some of that in there.
Yeah, you gotta keep a balance.
That's right.
We gotta perfectly have balance. Perfectly as all balanced. Things should be.
As all things should be.
Exactly.
Anyway, well, anyway. Keep looking for good stuff from us, because we're gonna be here for you guys.
Hell, the way that you've
been here for us.
And if you guys are interested, of course, as always, you can find us on TikTok, Instagram. We have a Gmail. We've got a, what is that thing called? Patreon and a Redbubble.
Didn't know my brain you were coming.
My brain works. But yeah, we've got merch that you can buy. We've got ways that you can support us. You can tell a friend to listen. I don't know. Get into contact with us if you want. We mm-hmm. try to post pretty regularly, you know. We've got our personal social media stuff that we always link in the Instagram if you want to get a better feel for our personal lives for some fucking reason. So yeah, hit us up, follow us, tell a friend, please. Mm-hmm. Love you. Smooch.
Chef kiss. Or just regular kiss. Anyway, yeah, so we'll be around, and we enjoy every minute of interacting with you guys. So we're going to continue to do so.
Hell yeah. Yes.
All right, guys. Thanks a lot. We hope to see you soon. When we get ready for our next episode, we will let you know. We will put that shit on blast. We will be everywhere with that.
Hell yeah, we will.
Yeah, we are. So, from Dylan, my co-host, my name is Jake. And we hope we've left you too scared to sleep.